Advisors, where Ron Berg and his staff offer tax, accounting, and payroll services for Minnesota businesses. With locations in Grand Rapids and Rush City, more information, lakes.tax.
And we receive support from the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, open Wednesdays and Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the intersection of Golf Course Road and Pokegama Avenue, offering an EBT double match and many more programs, bringing produce to members of our community. More at grfarmersmarket.org.
Coming up, we'll have headlines from Morning Edition. Our thanks goes out to Sanford Health. They have primary care locations in Bemidji and across the upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more, sanfordhealth.org. Going to be sunny today, 73 to 74 with calm winds. Clear skies tonight, 49 to 52.
And we receive support from L&M Fleet Supply, carrying a variety of products for your next outdoor adventure with 13 locations across the Northland. More at lmsupply.com.
You are listening to 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and the land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. We operate Translator K210DR in Brainerd, 89.9, and you can listen at KEXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate right now to 218-326-1234.
Now it's time for headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. President Trump says he'll have more to say today about Israel's airstrike on Hamas headquarters in the capital of Qatar. Speaking to reporters yesterday in Washington, the president said he was not thrilled with the Israeli strike in Doha. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is condemning the Israeli attack, saying it violated Qatar's sovereignty. An official with Hamas tells NPR none of its leaders was killed in the strike. Trump says he spoke to Israel's prime minister after the attack. Poland says it shot down several Russian drones after they entered Polish airspace during a Russian attack on Ukraine. The BBC's Adam Easton has more.
Both Polish jets and Dutch jets, which are stationed currently in Poland as part of the NATO air policing exercise, were scrambled. They tracked some of these drones that violated Polish airspace on radar, and they shot down those drones, which were deemed to be a threat. We don't know how many. We know that Polish police have discovered a damaged drone in a village not that far from the Belarusian border, not the Ukrainian border.
That's the BBC's Adam Easton. Afterwards, Poland's Prime Minister Donald Tusk met with top national security officials and said the Russian drones entering Polish airspace amounted to a large-scale provocation. The governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, is offering advice to people in Chicago as the Trump administration sends federal agents to the Windy City to crack down on illegal immigration. Alex Stegman with member station WBEZ has more.
The Supreme Court recently ruled that someone's perceived ethnicity can be considered, among other salient factors, when federal officials detain people suspected of being in the country illegally. Pritzker says the state cannot stop these types of patrols amid the immigration enforcement push, but he says residents can take precautions.
Federal law trumps state law, period, end of sentence. And so what we can do is make sure that people know their rights and that they're staying out of the way.
Pritzker reiterated that the state will take the Trump administration to court if they break state or federal law. He says that includes deploying the National Guard to Chicago absent his request, a request he says he's not making. For NPR News, I'm Alex Dagman in Springfield, Illinois.
A federal judge is temporarily blocking President Trump from firing Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook. The judge in Washington issued a preliminary injunction determining the president likely acted illegally when he tried to remove Cook from the central bank amid allegations she committed mortgage fraud in 2021. The judge cited a law designed to insulate the Fed from political interference. Judge Giacob also ruled Trump likely violated Cook's right to due process. This is NPR News. Wall Street closed at record highs yesterday after a revised report from the Labor Department showed job growth in the U.S. has been weaker than previously thought. The report found the economy likely added 911,000 fewer jobs in the 12 months ending in March, mostly during the final months of the Biden administration. The numbers fueled optimism among investors that the Federal Reserve will move to cut interest rates at next week's policy meeting. The Dow added 196 points to close at 45,711. Attorney General Pam Bondi is emphasizing the rights of parents to exempt their children from certain lessons in school based on religious beliefs. NPR's Jason DeRose says Bondi has issued a memo on parental rights in public schools.
The subject of the memo is upholding constitutional rights and parental authority in America's education system. It says the DOJ wants to protect parents exercising their rights in defense of, quote, family, faith, and the future of our nation. The memo says parents have a fundamental right to direct the moral and religious education of their children, and that schools receiving public funds must allow parents to exempt their children from lessons that conflict with the family's sincerely held religious beliefs, specifically beliefs related to sexuality and what it calls gender ideology. The memo says any attempt to burden these rights will face action from the Justice Department. Jason DeRose, NPR News.
Missouri's State House has approved a plan to redraw the state's congressional map. It now heads to the state Senate. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Visit St. Pete, Clearwater, Florida, where white sand beaches meet the arts, from the Dalí Museum to more than 500 public murals. More at visitspc.com. This is NPR.
You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here on member-supported KAXE KBXE. It is 8:06. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton. And with the recent federal funding being rescinded, it affected not only radio stations like our own, but also public television. Here to talk more about it is Lakeland PBS General Manager Jeff Hanks. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Andrew and Heidi. I greatly appreciate you having me on. It's just a wonderful opportunity to talk to folks.
Well, we're still here. That's good, right?
That's right. We're still here. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been, and as long as you folks, you know, we've been letting folks know that we're here. We're here to stay. We're going to fight for our existence. And, you know, we're having to kind of pivot relatively quickly here with a new funding environment. But we have a lot of support and encouragement coming our way. And we know we provide a vital service, all of us. And right. We're going to do what we can to keep that going.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. Where does Lakeland PBS get their funding from?
Okay, great question. Well, you know, previously, you know, we would get some operating grants through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, CPB. And for us, as a small rural PBS station, that amounted to about 37% of our operating budget, okay? But besides that, we also received some state grants as well in the form of matching grants and some small equipment grants from the state of Minnesota as well. But beyond that, you know, we worked very hard, just like yourselves, to, you know, seek support from private foundations, local business underwriting, been great supporters, and, of course, membership support. And of course, you know, we serve basically from the Canadian border down to Little Falls, you know, east over to Grand Rapids, west over to Wadena, you know, Boston. So it's a vast coverage area, but it's also very rural, as you know. Mm-hmm. So there's really, as opposed to a metro market, there's limited resources as far as numbers of, you know, individual members and, you know, major donors, businesses, that sort of thing. So it's our revenue comes from multiple sources, you know, both public and, you know, some state funding. But with the loss of that federal funding now, we're just leaning more heavily on those other pieces.
Yeah. Oh. I was going to say, in this whole conversation that has been happening since before the rescission, but I mean, it's been good in some ways to be able to talk about why it matters and how we're funded and be transparent. I'm sure that's been one of your big things, is to make sure people know exactly what we're doing, how we're doing it. But I think what's been, I'm sure you have felt this too, what's been lost in the kind of national narrative about this is rural places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And as you're both well aware, you're familiar with how we operate at Lakeland PBS, and we do a lot of different things. You know, we do local arts, culture, history programming, but really our kind of our signature service is our Lakeland News. That we're now in our 27th year of providing. Of course, that's the only televised newscast in North Central Minnesota. So that's, you know, highly watched. It's trusted for 27 years now. And through that broadcast, you know, we're covering stories in these rural communities, you know, from Black Duck to Reamer to Walker to Bagley, you know, those small stories from small towns, organizations, everything from school board coverage to local city government to nonprofit organizations are having an event, you know, having some sort of a initiative. You know, we're covering those things that just wouldn't be covered by the bigger, you know, Metro, Grand Forks, Duluth TV coverage, news coverage. So we've filled that gap, and really, you know, that's what that CPB funding was for years ago. That the Public Broadcasting Act was meant to provide universal service to cover those gaps where commercial media just wasn't gonna, you know, try and make a run of it. That's what. In effect, what it did here in North Central Minnesota, the Lakeland News, and made that possible. But now that being gone, you know, obviously we have a trusted product; it's very popular. But we need to lean into other forms of support to keep it going, since it's a, you know, a very expensive endeavor for a small station.
And it wasn't like an endeavor that was just done on a whim. It was something that was asking the people of our area of what do you want to see on your Lakeland PBS mm-hmm. station, and one of them was local news coverage.
Yep.
And like you said, been doing that for 27 years, and you can't do it without the people's support, and that's mm-hmm. what people wanted.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, we started Lakeland News back in 1998. It is kind of a funny story. It actually a lot of it stemmed from some, you know, surveys we did at that time. That was back when the Grand Forks flooding, the Red River flooding was happening. There were so many of those folks were displaced here. And that was just one of the major news events that was happening. People were looking for information. And, you know, we did a lot of surveys. And like Andrew said, you know, we just heard overwhelmingly that what people want in our region was that local news coverage. That's what would be most important to them. So we, at that point, we kind of put all our eggs in, all our resources in that new endeavor, Lakeland News, and jumped in and went from there. But again, we're providing that service that no other television broadcaster is doing. So again, that's what carries a lot of weight with people and our stakeholders.
Is it right that Lakeland is one of the only places that has a news coverage like this, rural public stations across the nation?
Yeah, definitely one of just a handful, yeah. I would say, especially, yeah, PBS stations. I think a lot more are leaning into local news coverage over the past several years to different degrees, different looks, but providing a live half-hour nightly newscast is still not done by a lot of PBS stations across. It's done by very few, and especially by small stations. Again, we just, when we're able to make that happen by just being extremely efficient. We're a small crew, as Andrew well knows, mm-hmm. has experience working with us in the past. But we all wear a lot of hats. You know that story for a lot of nonprofits. We all wear a lot of hats, but just very efficient and, you know, making those dollars that we do get in support for Lakeland News and our other productions go a long way. So,
you know, I always get kind of up on a soapbox about this, but it's so important if you live in the places we live in that you see your life and your experience reflected. You know, if mm-hmm. things like Lakeland go away or mm-hmm. KEXE, national media does not, unless, let's say the storms, the derecho this summer in Bemidji, certainly national or statewide media came in, mm-hmm. but they go away mm-hmm. after that storm. Mm-hmm. And people still need to know, like, where are you going to bring the branches? Where are you mm-hmm. going to do all this stuff? That's not something the Star Tribune is going to cover mm-hmm. because if they do come and cover a story here, they're doing that for an urban audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. They're looking at it through a different lens,
yeah.
really. They do great service.
Right.
Don't get me
absolutely.
Wrong. Absolutely. But it's that the day in, day out grind of the work that you folks are doing and we're doing, that truly local public media. We're telling stories, we're both telling stories from people and places that matter to our friends and neighbors in Grand Rapids, in Coleraine, you know, in Deer River, Bemidji. You know, we're covering those stories that just wouldn't be covered otherwise. A good example, personally, you know, the Black Duck high school softball team went to state for the first time ever this last spring. And our sports coverage is fantastic. Our Charlie Egger, our sports director, does a good job. He covered that story really well. And I was reached out to by some parents up in Black Duck area. It's just like, wow, that coverage just meant a lot to us and our community of that team and those kids and what it meant. That just wouldn't be happening otherwise. Stories like that. But that's just one example from one day, one week, you know, one spring of one year. But we're doing that day in and day out. So people are going to miss that if that goes away. So that's what we're fighting for.
And kind of going on what you were saying, Heidi, of like when other outlets come in to cover our area, it's usually something like a disaster happens or some bad news is happening that they'll come and cover that. Mm-hmm. But we are shining a light on like the positive things of our area as well. And mm-hmm. we're not, like you said, Heidi, we're not going away. This is our home. This is, mm-hmm. we want to promote mm-hmm. the good things that are happening in our area, which like you do at Lakeland PBS.
Yeah, that's right. You know, like yourselves, our reporters live right here. We face the same issues and challenges and opportunities as everyone else out there. So operations like us, you know, both of our organizations, we're in tune with all of our communities and we actively seek feedback from those communities, you know, unlike the larger metro media services. They're looking at it through a different lens. So we're here and that's our mission.
We're talking with General Manager of Lakeland Public Television, Jeff Hanks. We're talking about the public funding that was rescinded from the federal government for all of public media. Okay, so here's kind of a personal question. How you approach, let's say, Lakeland News, a lot of what was happening in the national narrative was saying that public media has a political bias. What did that mean to you? What's it actually like, or how do you feel about the news that you do in terms of people thinking that?
Yeah. Thanks for that question. that was definitely a tough one. Tough one for us. And I would push back against that. We're all about local coverage. That's what local stations are about. And you know, people have presented that argument before. And I've said, point out some specific examples of, you know, biased coverage in our news coverage, in our stories. You know, I'm a patient guy. I'll mm-hmm, wait. You know, mm-hmm. if you can give me some examples of that, you know, we'll take that and learn, you know, if there's some examples. But it's we really don't see that with our coverage. You know, people have pointed out the national PBS programming as being some examples. We don't specifically have control over that per se, but you know, definitely with our local productions we strive for that balanced mm-hmm. coverage, and I think we've proven that over 25 years or 45 years actually of our existence. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're governed by a board of directors that's rotating individuals from our community. And if there was, you know, if there was a bias there, you know, that would show up, you know, with that governance just, you know, would not allow that to happen. You know, mm-hmm. in my mind, that oversight of seeing a service that's meant to serve everyone in all viewpoints.
One of the cool things I've thought of Lakeland over the years is how it is training the next generation of people working in public media or in TV in general.
Yeah.
What has that meant to you guys? Or that's got to be a lot to manage, first of all, but also just a good thing to do in the world.
Yeah, it is. That's really been a fun thing to see. You know, yeah, our news department, you know, Dennis Wyman, our news director, has been with us since the beginning. You guys both know him well. He has basically just been a linchpin of that service, obviously. He loves teaching and the business of journalism, the basics of journalism, to these new reporters. Typically over the years we'd have younger reporters who would come straight out of a journalism program in college, and as typically would be their first jobs or one of their first jobs. And Dennis just such a good job of teaching them the basics and giving them opportunities they wouldn't get in a short period of time. They're sitting behind that anchor desk, or they're covering many different stories. They're operating as a one-man band. So they're getting that opportunity to advance really quickly. So it's a great farm system, if you will, if you're looking at a baseball analogy. But we've had a lot of reporters go on to much bigger markets. We've got a reporter that's on NBC Nightly News. Dave Schwartz went on to Care 11. A lot of people know his name. There's a lot of examples like that. It's just that quality journalism basics that our team, instills in those folks and provide good service.
And along with what Lakeland PBS does in the television department, there's also educational resources that Lakeland PBS provides too, like local schools and stuff like that. What are kind of the other things that Lakeland PBS does besides just television?
Yeah, thank you for that. We kind of get lost a lot of times in our main service. We do so much other things. Again, I talked about our arts, culture, history programming. We have had a series focusing on local arts and music, Backroads, of course. A lot of documentaries about local history, local culture events. But along with that, we also produce lesson plans that align to state standards for educators that are free and available to, local, homeschoolers or, local school districts, teachers to utilize. For instance, if we did a documentary recently on the Boys of Bataan from the Brainerd area that in World War II, that story. So it was a really fascinating documentary of that story of those young men from the Brainerd area who in World War II went to Bataan, gave the ultimate sacrifice. So it was a well-done documentary, but we then took that and worked with a local educator, local teacher, to provide a lesson plan, downloadable, free, utilizing that documentary that teachers, homeschoolers can use. And that's just one example. So we have all these free lesson plans that tie to our productions, and along with the national PBS productions as well. So education is a big component.
So how have viewers responded? How have your members responded since this happened?
It's been fantastic. I was just writing for our monthly highlights publication. I was writing my article yesterday, and I was thinking back on the past couple of months, and it's definitely been challenging and, definitely some heartache and heartburn. But we've just seen an outpouring of support. We've definitely seen an uptick in, our membership donations, which is absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And we've seen that across the system. But again, for a small rural station, that's going to be, that's awfully hard to fill that gap that we're looking at, of course. But along with that, just all the messages of encouragement. Hey, we have your back. We support public media. We believe in what you're doing. From across the board, we've seen that. Calls, letters, emails, you name it. We've had people contacting us. I just noticed a pledge come in this morning, as a matter of fact, from Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
There is an effort out there called Adopt a Station, basically a website that lists all the stations system-wide, radio, TV, everything. And people can search on there, and it kind of shows what their need is, with the rescission of the funding. And it takes to the websites of the stations, and it gives a direct opportunity to give. So people are out there actively wanting to support public media. So it's just been really heartening to see all the support we've gotten.
And I suppose, so it sounds like, so you'll do kind of to deal with this loss of funding, you kind of just have to scramble like we are, finding other sources and fulfilling our missions and doing what we're doing.
That's right, Heidi. First and foremost, we have a great board of directors, and they recognize, along with our staff, number one, we work really efficiently to provide a good quality local service that people utilize, find relevant, and want to buy into. So that's number one, provide that service. But with that federal funding being gone, yes, it is a bit of a scramble. We are we're fortunate at Lakeland. We do have some reserves that we're able to draw on for the coming year to help support our various services. But those reserves are finite. They're not going to last forever. So obviously, we're pivoting. We are going to be launching a aggressive campaign in the coming months, coming year, attacking all those different angles. Again, you know, foundations, individual members, major donors, all those things. We're just going to be really reaching out and, with our story and our plan and, trying to backfill that gap as much as we can.
Yeah, and if you want to show support for what Lakeland PBS does, that website, lptv.org, with the big donate button.
That's right.
And we sure have appreciated over the years the, working with you and kind of the relationship that most public media has with each other, this sharing sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Over the years, I mean, that's where I first learned how to talk to elected officials or people who are running for office, as you invited us in. I remember early on, Scott Hall was going to do it. And I was like, okay, can I go with? I want to see what's going on here. Mm-hmm. Not thinking that hey, I might be sitting on these panels later or figure that kind of thing out. Mm-hmm. Now, that may not seem like a big deal that, you invite other media to be on these panels, but for us, that would be so hard to manage that whole thing. So just to be one little part of it, but be able to ask the questions that we need to ask and be involved in it is huge. We could not manage that on our own. So we've always really appreciated being asked and being a part of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, Heidi. And you're referring to our debate night.
Yeah.
Our local House and Senate debates that we produce during election cycles. We've been doing those for a long time now, basically since late 90s as well, early 2000s, somewhere in there. We thought it would be a great way to show, unity with our, colleagues in media, mm-hmm. both nonprofit and profit, to help us out with that. It's a lot of leverage. With those debates, especially in recent years, some public people running for public office don't always, make themselves available for debates at different forums, but they've generally always showed up for our debates. It's a big deal. I think largely because we have partners like KXC on that panel, Bemidji Pioneer, Park Rapids Enterprise, Brainerd Dispatch. Mm-hmm. Those people are there really amplifying that coverage, and people get to hear directly what their elected officials, as far as Minnesota House and Senate, have to say and what their platform is through our debate night.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jeff, for joining us this morning.
You're very welcome. I greatly appreciate the opportunity. It was great to see you two again.
Yeah. Well, hang in there together, right?
Yes.
It sounds like we're all very determined. That's good.
Yes, we're all in this together.
Yep.
All right, we'll play a tune for you right now. This is Katie Schechter with Run, River, Run.
Just for fun. So every time you try to hold me up, News. I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. A 35-year-old woman died in a three-vehicle car crash in Virginia on Friday. The Mesabi Tribune says the crash on 2nd Avenue North was reported just before 3 p.m. Law enforcement found one of the drivers unresponsive, and she did not appear to be breathing. She was later pronounced dead. The two other drivers suffered non-life-threatening injuries. The Tribune reported Friday that the crash was still under investigation. The University of Minnesota's service workers' impending strike has made headlines over the past few weeks, but some Grand Rapids residents may have been surprised to see a picket line when the strike began Tuesday. Six members of Teamsters Local 320 picketed alongside Highway 169. They do maintenance, grounds, and agricultural work at the U's North Central Research and Outreach Center, which shares a campus with Minnesota North College Itasca. The six are just a small part of the open-ended strike. Some 1,400 workers across at least eight campuses are asking for fair wages and other protections. The university says the demands are, quote, unrealistic in today's financial landscape. Billy O'Brien has been a maintenance and operations mechanic for 3 years and has worked at NICROC for 10. He says they're striking for equal pay and standardized contracts to increase future negotiating leverage. But they're also out there to fight for college campus workers that haven't gotten the treatment he says they deserve.
We were close to negotiating a good contract. I felt there's just a little bit more that some of the people feel that the university can give. And we're going to try to get that. So
the union says over 80% of workers rejected the university's last offer Friday. Minnesota is joining a growing list of Democratic-leaning states standing up for access to vaccines. Governor Tim Walz issued an executive order Monday. It directs the state departments of health and commerce to figure out how to make sure Minnesotans keep receiving vaccines. The order comes amid quickly changing federal recommendations under Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a prominent anti-vaxxer. The Minnesota Reformer reports that Colorado, Massachusetts, New Mexico, New York, and Pennsylvania issued similar orders after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said it would limit who can get the COVID-19 vaccine. According to a news release from Walz, Minnesota pharmacists can still give the vaccine, regardless of the recommendations. The reformer says Walz's order is slightly less aggressive than other states. The health department's medical director should issue an order on COVID vaccine access within the next 2 weeks. The department's health insurers and providers have to meet by October 6th to come up with a plan to address barriers to vaccine access. Zebra mussels have been confirmed in three more northern Minnesota lakes. The Department of Natural Resources announced the finding of adult zebra mussels in Roosevelt Lake in Outing and Swan Lake in Pengilly on Tuesday, as well as the discovery of veligers in White Earth Lake near White Earth. White Earth Nation invasive species staff found the veligers or larvae in water samples. The discovery suggests a reproducing population, though adult zebra mussels have not yet been found. The DNR reminds boaters that clean, drain, dry rules are state law. Find more on preventing the spread of aquatic invasive species at mndnr.gov/AIS. The Minnesota Department of Transportation is hosting an open house on Highway 169 road safety improvements. The agency is looking at the four-lane stretches of the road in Itasca County. The goal of the safety audit is to identify safety issues and propose short, medium, and long-term strategies to address them. Staff will be at the open house at the Nyberg Community Center in Coleraine to answer questions and hear feedback. The event starts at 5 p.m. Thursday with a short presentation at 5:15. Find more information and other ways to comment at kaxe.org. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
This is The Setlist on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are looking at shows Thursday through Saturday, September 11th through the 13th, in Grand Rapids, Aiken, Coleraine, and Big Fork. First up, folk singer-songwriter Rachel Kilgore is coming to the Co-House in Grand Rapids Thursday at 7:30 p.m. The Duluth singer won the 2017 Careville New Folk Contest and most recently released the album My Father Loved Me in 2023, which explored her relationship with her late father. She is a 2025 McKnight Music Fellow. It is Rachel Kilgore this Thursday at the Co-House in Grand Rapids. On Friday, Jay Bell and the Lazy Susan Band are playing The Terrace in downtown Aiken at 7 p.m. An Americana and rock and roll band that features a horn section, B3 Hammond, and twangy guitars, they've released 6 albums since forming in 2001. Jay Bell and the Lazy Susan Band in Aiken Friday night. On Saturday, the Bugle Boys are playing at Smoke on the Water in Coleraine at 6 p.m. A stripped-down duo of vocalist and guitarist Clay Fulton and the drummer from his band The Lost 40, the Bugle Boys play a stomping and rowdy brand of folk blues music. Saturday in Coleraine at Smoke on the Water. Finally, Sam Miltich and friends are playing at the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork, Saturday at 7 p.m. The Militici new music from the Old Country Show will feature the jazz group's take on Balkan and other Eastern European folk music, a style Miltich explored on his 2019 album, Peasants with Torches. Sam Miltich and friends in Big Fork this Saturday. The set list is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and we'll post the latest edition every Wednesday at KAXE.org.
The set list here on the Wednesday morning show. It is 8:38, and in just a bit, we are going to have Area Voices, my conversation with Kevin Cease about his upcoming one-man show that'll be going on this weekend. Local businesses, you can help defend the future of KXE and keep People Power Radio on the air with your sponsorship dollars. Visit kaxe.org/give to learn about sponsorship options. A big thank you to all our current business sponsors.
We'd also like to thank the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork. Mm-hmm. They present Militici, new music from the Old Country. Sam Miltich and his friends are taking the stage on Saturday, September 13th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at the door. Info at edgecenterarts.org.
And support for KAXE comes from Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids. The Martini Monday music series concludes with PK Mayo and Greg Kaiser on September 22nd from 5 to 8 p.m., presenting a variety of original songs and familiar compositions. Information about upcoming events is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
Once again, thanks to everybody who joined us at Grand Rapids River Fest. It was so much fun. It was great to see everybody. If you are interested in getting involved in supporting KAXE, text us anytime, 218-326-1234. Speaking of texts, we had some that were coming in this morning as we were having conversations about weeds and public media. We were also talking about music. Steve was telling us about how his 13-year-old has a look of awe on her face whenever she walks into the CD library at KAXE. And then Steve from St. Paul, who I finally got to meet, he was at the festival.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun. We were talking about favorite TV shows. That is our getting recommendations. That's our question of the week. He said Californication with David Duchovny. Wow, what a train wreck, but great tunes and cover tunes. I would always make sure my phone was close by so I could Shazam whatever it was. And he said one of his favorite covers was the Cheap Tricks, I Want You to Want Me. Definitely worth looking up.
Californication was one of the first shows you could stream on Netflix, and that's how I started watching it.
All right. And I love Dwight Yoakam's version of I Want You to Want Me.
Oh.
So good. We also heard from Pat, who said, what was the name of the intrusive weed that we talked about with the master gardener this morning?
The quickweed, wasn't it?
Quickweed, yeah. Hope you didn't have it in yours. I think he was devastated.
Yeah.
It was tough. Felt bad.
And we received support from the First State Bank of Big Fork, with branches in Big Fork and Kellyer, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912, fsbbigfork.com, member FDIC.
Our thanks also goes out to Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
Now it's time to hear from our album of the week. This week it's Arrivals and Departures, Adventures of Captain Kurt by Curtis Harding. This is the fourth album from the Atlanta, Georgia soul singer Curtis Harding, and it is a sci-fi concept album that brings classical soul to space opera. And the tune I'm going to play for you now is called The Winter Soldier. And that is Curtis Harding with the song The Winter Soldier from our Album of the Week, Departures and Arrivals, Adventures of Captain Kurt. Here on the Wednesday Morning Show, I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton. And coming up next is Area Voices. All drivers can help reduce pedestrian vehicle crashes on Minnesota roads by watching for pedestrians. Stop for crossing pedestrians at every single corner. Pay attention and be prepared to stop for pedestrians. It's the law. Brought to you by the Minnesota Department of Transportation and Public Safety.
We'd also like to thank the Green Heron Bed and Breakfast, a four-season B&B on Pacagama Lake with home-cooked meals and the amenities for a complete family vacation. More information at greenheronbnb.com. I'm very excited for this Area Voices conversation about a local guy putting on a one-man show.
My hat's off to Kevin Sees for taking on this endeavor. Now we're going to hear that conversation here on Area Voices here on the Wednesday Morning Show. My name is Andrew DeZingle, and I'm the producer of Area Voices. I've had the pleasure of working with Kevin Sees on numerous theater productions, so when I heard he was doing a one-man show, my interest was piqued.
His upcoming show is called An Evening with Kevin Cease and His Dog Molly, and it'll be going on September 12th through the 14th. Later, we'll talk about how he got into theater in the first place. But first, I wanted to hear, what is this one-man show going to be all about?
Welcome to the world of Kevin Cease's mind. It's going to be a kind of a interesting experience. I have always wanted to do a one-man show. And so I've looked at like Abe Lincoln and Will Rogers and, you know, Mark Twain. But it never felt right. And I just thought, you know, I bet you I just could tell some stories and maybe do a little, you know, poetry, maybe do some little singing, little dancing. I have a little dance break for everybody.
Oh.
Do some crowd work. And then I thought, you know, it would be very nice to have my therapy dog, Molly, with me. And so I would like to go to theater with dogs. So, I don't know. It just made sense to me. And then I saw a call this spring for directors from the Bemidji Community Theater. And I wrote a very droll letter just saying, well, I could direct myself. And I think I was going to guarantee that I'd get like 85% of my lines. Now, you've worked with me on stage before. You know, 85% of me getting lines right, that's a pretty high percentage for me, you know. And then I would just give myself my own cue lines, so I wouldn't have to worry about that.
So you said that this was something you've always been interested in. What kind of sparked that? Because, like, I recognize some of the one-man shows that you mentioned, but was it something you grew up with seeing, or you're like, oh, maybe I could do that one day?
I think it's just the challenge of, could I hold a house for 2 hours? I mean, with a break, of course, because we have to do the Ernie Rall 45-minute first act. We can't have that over that. He likes to have that. And there's an actor at the Paul Bunyan Playhouse early on in the early days that I'd seen. His name is Jim Stoll. Just a great guy. And he would tell stories. And I was just fascinated. Like, how can you just, it's just be you? And so it's such a challenge to do that. And I'm 65 years old now. And so my acuity level is going down and down and down. If I'm going to do this, this is the time to do it. And I'm so energized by it, and I'm excited for it. And I can't wait to do it. And it's not just an experiment in my own thought process. And so, yeah.
And so how long have you been working on this project?
I was looking at notes. 6 years.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And in my own mind, you know, I've been taking, in fact, I just added that up last night. It's like, oh my gosh, this is something I saw in 2019 that I was writing notes down for to do this or do that. And it's kind of taken shape over the course of the years just to tell, you know, stories from my life, my professional life, tell really goofy stories from my family or friends or whatever it might be. And then I love doing crowd work. And so we'll just kind of see how the audience responds. And Molly is our therapy dog at the funeral home. And it's every once in a while, a family will say, we want Molly at the service. And I'll go, okay, all right. And so she does pretty good. She goes person to person to person. And it's just right there. Although, like, halfway through a service once, I saw the little, gears going, like, in her mind, thinking, you know what this party needs? And she ran off and got her squeakiest toy to bring in. Like, you know, everybody needs a squeaky toy during their mom's funeral, right? So I kind of grabbed that.
So with a project like this, do you have someone as, like, kind of assistant directing you, or are you kind of, you're one man showing it?
I'm
behind the scenes as well.
I literally want to do one. I don't want a set built because there's a production coming up. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to have three chairs up there. I'm going to, if I can, I've talked to Vicki Stenderson, and whatever lighting is there, I'm just going to use. I don't need to have anything special. And my goal would be to, at the community theater, you can't do the house lights and the regular lights. They're not connected. I don't know if you knew. I never knew that. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So somebody's going to have to turn the house lights down, and it would be really fun for me to turn the stage lights up, come down the stairs, and then leave, turn my lights off, And so that you wouldn't even need a lighting person. I want to do and play my own music on a speaker and just have, I don't know. I'm so excited by this. The great thing is that I might truly bomb. This might not work out, but there's no consequences from that because anybody who's going to show up is going to know you've worked with me before. I'm kind of an odd duck, you know. I can't wait to see what happens because I have a feeling the energy of each house is gonna temper what I do and say and which direction I go into. And so I'm feeling very safe and comfortable with it. But even if I really do terrible, I'm going to be fine.
And you get to say that you did that.
Yes, I do that. Yeah, and my actor friends will tease me the rest of my life about that. So
when working on this project, did you, like, you said you were writing down stories that were coming to you for the past 6 years. Did you ever test people out saying, like, okay, what do you think of me talking about this, like, kind of thing? Or are you kind of just going off of, like...
It's more stories that I've told my friends and family. So this won't, you know, my family will know pretty much every story. They've heard me say this before. You know, we all have our little stories that we like to tell to our friends and family in different settings or regarding many different topics. And so these are stories that I've told many times out loud. And so I don't really need to write it down word for word. I know the story. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to talk about what it's like growing up in Bagley, this small little town. I'm going to talk about what it's like to, I'm sober and talk about my sobriety journey. I am going to talk about dogs and how important they are to me in my life and how much I love them. I'm going to talk about how I take inspiration from my wife. And I'm going to talk about just kind of some Kevin Cease life hacks, which are going to be really weird. But and so how to live your life in a lighter, nice, happy, joyful life. So it's going to be a little, it's things I've talked about and presented over the years, but never all in once encompassing thing.
So since this is like sort of like kind of the ultimate theater actor exercise.
It is. Thank you for recognizing that, Andrew.
Let's go back. How did you first get interested in theater in the first place?
Nobody's ever asked me that before. High school is where it kind of all started. And I loved our one-act play. We had great directors. We had a musical that we would do. So talk about not knowing my lines sometimes. You know this. And so even in high school, as a junior in high school, I was Perchick in Fiddler on the Roof. And Perchick stops this wedding and literally just says, stop the wedding. I didn't know my lady. My girlfriend was there. My parents were there. My grandparents were there. It was agonizing. And even through that, I don't have to tell you, when you're on stage, you feel truly alive. There is no other time element. You're not in the past anymore because that's all done. You can think of a little bit about toward the future, but you have to live in the moment. And I have just been blessed being in this community because I always say they let me be me. They let me be in plays. And I think I've been in many dozens and dozens over the last 40 years. And I just gain energy. But mainly what I love about theater is that it builds community. We get to do this, right? You know, we get to be together and we have this experience. We have this shared experience off the stage before it begins, on the stage while it's happening. And then we as actors always talk about the shows that we've been in and what happened and what they did. And oh my gosh, I gain such energy from it. And I love theater because it is the true expression, I think, of human emotions because you get to see everything on there. You have joy, sadness, and if it's done well, you walk away a changed person, even if it's just for a night. The great thing about stories is, for me anyway, I'm hoping that I'll be able to transition it as I need to, and you're not going to know what I'm going to say anyway. So I can end, if I'm really bombing, really bad, I can just end it. Collect my dog, put her on my leash, and just walk out.
And good night, folks.
What a night of theater.
So what would you say is your ultimate goal for the show, for the what the audience takes away from it? Is it like kind of peering into what the human experience is in the Kevin Cease's eyes?
Yes. You have nailed that exactly right. Yeah. No, it's, I want to know what it's like to express myself for that long and hold that. But the continual theme is really it's all about the love and connection and community. Without love and connection, we have nothing. We are nothing. Our shared experiences is what it is. And so if we focus on what we're going to be doing and respond and not really enjoy the moment that you're in, life can be very miserable. And I want to share the experience of finding joy even in little things. The only thing we're in control of, Andrew, is our reaction to the things that are happening around to us. So we can control how we feel. We can control our reaction, and it takes a long time to figure that out. We don't have to react to something. We can live in the now and understand it's about that love. That person is doing something because they're motivated by a love of a different thing. And so that's my goal, is to be able to share that little insight that I have. Not that I'm great or wonderful or that I have all the answers, but I do have a little bit of a skill in being able to enjoy what we have in the moment.
Kevin Cease has been my guest today. His one-man show, An Evening with Kevin Cease and His Dog Molly, is September 12th, 13th, and 14th. You can get your tickets at the door or online at the Bemidji Community Theater website. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. And you're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show here on KAXE KBXE People Power Radio. And just a bit, we're going to hand things over to Headwaters, to Malachi Coons. I'm Andrew Dezingle here with Heidi Holton.
Malachi always puts together a great morning of music. You're going to want to stay tuned. And then later today at 1 o'clock, it is Marie Debris. She is on the river. Tonight at 7 o'clock, Sarah is our host.
We receive support from ICTV. ICTV connects, informs, and empowers the community through diverse media. Learn more at watchictv.org. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org.
We're looking for your favorite TV shows as we head into fall. We'll put together a list of recommendations. It can be new or old. And once again, Andrew, you are supposed to watch those Americans DVDs that you purchased but have never watched yet.
Yep, I buy them.
Franchise.
I bought them every time they went on sale at Target. And I was like, yep, I am committed. I'm going to watch this. And it's been, I think it's been off the air for 10 years.
Maybe we'll have to tag team that. Maybe I'll start watching it too. So then we have some, because that's
the hard
thing.
Yeah, then we can talk about it. Yeah.
Right. That is the hard thing. We'll start our own Americans podcast.
Hey, perhaps. There we go. What would we call it? Well, we can.
You're good at the name thing. You'll come up with something good.
Looking at weather today, we have sunny skies, high 73 to 74 with calm wind.